Hello, everybody. Welcome to the How to Hide a Dead Body podcast, brought to you by Adventure Media. I am Isaac Radansky. I'm with Patrick Gilbert and Danielle Immerman. Today is going to be an exciting, slight divergence from our typical structure and conversation. I'm incredibly excited about hearing Danielle's thoughts. Our listeners know Danielle as the content queen extraordinaire who works her magic from the background. But today we're bringing Danielle to the foreground, and it's very exciting. But first, I also want to talk about Patrick's book for a moment. Join or Die, Digital Advertising in the Age of Automation is available on Amazon, in hardcover, in softcover, in Kindle, soon to be in audiobook format. Check it out. Join or Die, Digital Advertising in the Age of Automation by Patrick Gilbert. It is a digital advertising masterclass. And if not for the book itself, buy it for the foreword, which I wrote. It's a page and a half. It's worth a $35 hardcover, certainly the Kindle or the softcover. It's also forwarded by David Sable, former CEO of Young & Rubicam. And it's the feedback on the book so far has been incredible. People are really seeing how much they can enhance their knowledge base, their skill set, and their capacity to drive profit in the age of machine learning and automation. So Join or Die, Digital Advertising in the Age of Automation, on available on Amazon now. And without further ado, we're going to introduce Patrick and Danielle to kick us off on this exciting podcast session.
Thank you, Isaac. So we're going to take a bit of a different route today. Instead of just you and I droning on and on about whatever's top of mind for us, We're gonna shine the light on Danielle, who has been the fan favorite on the podcast so far. You know, we brought her in from time to time, and her commentary thus far has been absolutely the best quality stuff we've produced at this point. Danielle is in a really interesting role. She obviously produces the podcast, but she kind of manages all of our content that comes out of Adventure Media, whether it's social media or whether it's case studies and other content for our website. It's really anything that's coming out of here is kind of going through her desk and being edited. She has a lot of skills and wears a lot of hats, and certainly does not get enough credit for the amount of value that she's been contributing to our company. But I really want to interview Danielle as if it's like a one-on-one meeting, like as if we're just kind of touching base about how things are going. I want to get your perspective on what's been working, what hasn't been working, and in the most meta of ways, turn it into some content here. But your story, to back up a little bit, I think is just really interesting by itself. And there's a lot that people can learn from what you've endured over the last 6 or 7 months since you've come on board. You interviewed for a completely different position. We interviewed you for an account management role. And at some point during the interview process, I don't even remember if like you had said something or we had said something. It became abundantly clear that you have all of these content skills and you think a certain way that was going to help us do all of these great things. So talk to us, like, let's start there. What was that like for you when you were kind of going through this process? And I bet it was like probably, I would imagine if I were in your shoes, I would be kind of afraid to like suggest like, hey, maybe you should hire me for something else. Like, what was that whole experience like?
Terrifying, to say the least. I don't get scared very easily. And I don't think terrifying is maybe the best word, but I remember distinctly, like I was interviewing for a few different positions at different companies at the time. Nothing was really working out for me at all. I had been applying for jobs for 6 months during the height of COVID. I don't know, this opportunity kind of fell into my lap. I knew someone who was working at Adventure at the time. So the role was suggested to me through her. I knew pretty much nothing about the work that you guys do. I knew nothing about what it would mean to be an account manager. And I think it became abundantly clear to me that it would not be a good fit. I have an aversion to numbers. I have an aversion to Excel. So for me, I definitely envisioned myself in more of a creative and writing heavy role, whatever I would land in. So what I thought at the time was me rejecting an opportunity was scary, because I was like, listen, like if my ultimate goal is to get to New York, if my ultimate goal is to find a job, like why am I turning down this perfectly great opportunity? So that was scary, taking that opportunity that I had, and like in my mind, closing the door on it. I've never done anything like that. I'm an opportunist. I'm an optimist. And I didn't think anything would have come out or turned out like it did. I didn't think I would be offered this content position at all. But the fact that it turned out in my favor, I think just goes to show that you don't necessarily know the outcomes and you don't necessarily know what no is going to get you.
So that's interesting. And I think, well, one, you're definitely not giving yourself enough credit. I think from what I've observed, you could have done well as an account manager and you've been participating in a lot of client strategy meetings and have been extremely valuable there. But putting that aside, in the middle of this process, we had sort of said, hey, look, you know, your skills, especially as you're describing it, seem to point in the direction of a content role, which is something that we've known for a very long time that we should have, but we don't. And we've never hired for this. It just hasn't been a priority. We've known we wanted this and we haven't done it. And part of that is because we haven't figured out exactly what that would be. We were never willing to take the pledge on or take the commitment to hire somebody in this role because we weren't able to figure out what that would mean. So we basically put it on you and said, hey, look, let's, in the middle of the interview, it was like, okay, let's just stop this for now. Let's come back in a week or 2 weeks, whatever it was. And you tell us like what you want to interview for, like just pitch this role to us. Now, what was that process like where it was like, okay, now not only do I not know what I'm doing, but these guys that are interviewing me clearly don't even know what the hell is going on. So like, what was that whole process like?
I think there were a lot of uncertainties. I just went for it. I think my logic and my thought process in general tends to be not to overanalyze things and not to really think too much about what I'm doing in the moment. I just kind of go for it. And, you know, I saw a group of people that seemed like they were very intelligent, which turned out to be true, thankfully. And I just like went with the punches. And I don't know, like content has always been something I've always been interested in. I think it depends on where you're producing content. The nature of content changes, but I know in general how to write. I in general know social media. I've worked in an agency setting before, so I had some familiarity in terms of what that kind of life and culture would be like. So I wasn't completely in the dark, but I definitely think fitting the puzzle pieces together was a process throughout the interview process itself, and it continued to be and continues to be right now a process. It's all a jigsaw puzzle. And I think the more time you spend somewhere, the more time you put in with people, the more you put those pieces together. So I think the interview process was really like the first step. And yeah, I think it kind of just naturally came about. I didn't think too much about it.
Interesting. I mean, pretty big decision. So now you get hired and we bring you on day one. And I remember being in Isaac's office and we tried formulating, we drew all of our content engine materials, whatever, on a big whiteboard. And we were just like, hey, listen, you just take this and figure out what we need to do to be better at producing and distributing content. But again, this is a completely new role. Like, we didn't have a lot of direction for you. And you had to go and figure this out on your own, essentially. And that's something that I think a lot of people could resonate with, especially with smaller companies. People are brought in, and it's not just for a content role. People can be brought in for a sales role or an account management role or whatever it is at a smaller company to do something that hasn't been done before. Now, it's a lonely place to be. We have a lot of account managers here. So like, if you're struggling early on and you're getting your, like trying to learn some new things, you can lean on other people, but you're in a completely new position. So it's lonely. There's not a lot of like great feedback and guidance that like we could provide. And I think a lot of it, especially in the specific work that you do, it lends itself to the sort of thing where a lot of the feedback has to be negative, where Isaac and I would say, hey, look, you know, let's get a case study template. And you come back and really the only feedback we can give is what we don't like about something. So what has this whole journey been like for you to be able to power through and take all that in stride and continue to learn and not hate us while you go through this process?
I think this is the part of the podcast where we switch from podcast mode into internal meeting mode, where majority of what I'm about to say, you probably never heard.
That's why we're doing this.
This is just a warm up to my next question, which is what you don't like about myself and Patrick, and I'd like it to be broadcast, and it's going to be a real test of your courage. If you're willing to impugn my character to the world, to our, you know, 175,000 average weekly listeners.
So we know based on my high performance quiz that I have a very high level of courage. So you're going to really regret asking me to do this because I will.
Yeah, just do Patrick first.
Well, that was an opportunity there to plug our earlier episodes on high performance habits. Check that out and you'll know what Danielle was just talking about. See, I'm pulling my weight. I'm plugging content here.
Patrick, you might take over my job. I should be a little worried.
Let's not jump ahead of that.
No, I promise you that's not a concern of yours specifically, Danielle.
Good. I'm glad to hear it. circling back, Patrick, to your original question, which now, honestly, I'm sidetracked. So let's repeat it one more time.
New role, and it's scary, and it's probably frustrating and lonely. And yeah, how do you handle that?
So it's interesting. I don't think I mentioned this to either of you, but early on when I first started, I was really struggling and I wasn't really sure why. So I met with a career coach and I was like, I don't know, like what kind of worker am I? I've never had a full-time job. So like step back for a second. This is a new role. This is a new department I'm carving out. I'm working alone and it's my first full-time job. So I think there are a lot of factors that were working together to make my frustrations a little more heightened than they should have been. And in my meeting with this career coach, I discovered a lot about myself in terms of like how I work, what I need to really thrive in a job setting. And one of the biggest things that I need is collaboration and teamwork, which I don't think I've mentioned before. And working alone has definitely been extremely hard. It's probably been the hardest thing I've had to deal with. So I've tried to find my way around that. I've reached out to other people on the team, see if I could help with something, see if I can learn something from them. And that's definitely made a difference. But I think since the majority of my day is spent immersed in content, editing, writing, managing social media, it can be a very lonely place. And it's hard for my ideas to really, I think, thrive because I do need that brainstorming. I do need that collaboration. And not having that, I think, impedes on my progress a little bit. But at the same time, like, you know, there are ways that I've tried to get around it. And I think it's definitely a learning process.
And one thing I'll add to that, though, is I didn't know about the career coach that you had reached out to. That's a testament to your character and your drive to do well. And I think that, like, hearing that is not surprising to me because I know that you're the kind of person that takes these things very seriously. And I think that's awesome that you've done that. And I think in addition to that, one specific instance that I remember is, we've been remote for a lot of this stuff. So it's really hard to do this collaboration piece when we're either not in the office or half the team's out of the office, whatever it is. And at the very beginning, I was including you on as many meetings and emails and Slack channels as possible. But then as you started to get more work, I sort of just like pulled away from that because I essentially didn't want to bother you. Your calendar was starting to get busy with a lot of other things. And then at some point you would reach out to me and you're like, hey, listen, please invite me to more things. Like, let me be a fly on the wall for more client meetings, for more this, that, whatever. And I was like, oh, totally. Like, absolutely. And that, like, that proactivity of like kind of voicing your own, like a need that you had based on this extreme self-awareness that you've been kind of practicing to figure out how you work well and what you need, that's really beneficial. It's a small thing. Like, it might be viewed as a small thing to like reach out and say, I want to be involved in more client meetings. But what that really is doing is helping foster that collaboration piece that you've identified as being so essential. So I think that's awesome.
Thank you. Yeah. And like to that point, it's been so helpful. It was so helpful. It continues to be so helpful for me to be in on as many meetings as possible, because I think, you know, this speaks to another struggle. And this speaks to something that I just know about myself is that in order to produce content, I really feel like I need to understand what I'm producing. I need to understand the business. I need to understand the subject matter. I can't just go in there blind and create a LinkedIn post, a blog post, a case study without understanding the vocabulary. I think for me, it will never work. And I think this could be true about all content that's being produced, no matter what field you're in, is that you need to understand what you're doing. You need to understand what you're writing about. And if you don't, like, the content's just not going to be strong. So I think that was a struggle coming in at the offset, was that I didn't know a thing about the work that was being done here at all. So having that learning phase and learning the vocabulary, sitting in on those meetings, really helped me get to a place where I'm by no means an expert today. I could never do what the account managers do. I just don't have that level of understanding. But having a better understanding and having that vocabulary has definitely helped me overcome that initial struggle.
And so aside from the actual piece that helps you make content, like, what else about the fact that this is a unique position that you've had to create yourself? Like, what have been the struggles there? What has really helped you overcome those struggles?
I think the struggles in creating the content and being in this position alone, I think definitely it can be overwhelming. Like, there are a lot of different pieces of content that I can be working on. So one of the things that I think has helped me in that is this podcast, because, you know, I've been really trying to create a process and streamline how content is being produced. When I first came in, like, we had a million different things going on at the same time. There wasn't really a top-down approach. It was like, okay, here are some case studies, here are blog posts, like, here are all of these other articles that you can go through and repurpose, here social media accounts, here are seven of them, like, let's get content on everything. So for me, like, I'm the kind of person that really needs structure. I really need to know, like, okay, A, B, C, D, this is what I'm going to do today, tomorrow, next day. Not having that and kind of figuring out, like, okay, how am I going to make this organized? How am I going to make this make sense in my own mind? That definitely was a struggle. But I think, you know, at the same time, like, when you come into any job, there is that period of time where you have to, like, okay, take an assessment of what you have to deal with and learn for yourself what makes the most sense in terms of how you're going to organize and streamline everything that you do. So I think getting that together and figuring out the best approach and process for us and, like, what works at this company definitely has made a difference.
That's really interesting. And I think you're sort of alluding to the idea that the podcast has been, like, a grounding factor in a very overwhelming and confusing environment. And we talk a lot, including on this podcast, about creating goals and creating an environment and certain habits that alleviate this threat of the hamster wheel. This is an analogy I've used, where it just feels like you're going and going and going and not getting anywhere. And I've felt like that, especially coming from an account management background. I personally have found that, like, finding something that you can do on a repeated basis where you know that it's like, okay, this is an important thing that I'm working on, I'm making progress, and then I can hit publish on a recurring basis is extremely fulfilling and important to help alleviate a lot of these symptoms of being overwhelmed and in feeling lost, essentially. And what I find most interesting about this, though, is that it's almost irrelevant as to whether or not this podcast is the most important thing that you're actually working on or that we as a company are working on. Like, you're working on a lot of other projects right now that, I mean, this is no offense to the podcast as itself, but, like, they're much more important than the podcast as far as what they mean to the company. But this has sort of taken priority and it's sort of grounding in a way because it's on a repeated basis. And I think that's really interesting to create something like that. And it sort of happened by accident, but I think that that's been a benefit.
Yeah, it definitely has. I think having that weekly reminder of, like, okay, today we're recording the podcast. I know, like, Wednesday or whenever I have, like, the full day to edit it. I have social content for the next week. I have transcripts that I can repurpose and make other content out of, so I don't have to just pull it out of thin air. It's definitely helped me stay grounded, and it's helped me know that I have work to do and I don't have to just sit and stare at the wall and pull something out of thin air, because that's definitely a lot harder.
So what would your advice be for us for the next time we hire a role that doesn't exist currently? What should we do differently? What could we be doing better?
Interesting question. I like it. I think for me, you know, people always say, oh, you majored in communications, you must be really good at communicating, which is like the running joke. It has nothing to do with how you speak. It has nothing to do with communicating at all. But what I will say is that I am big on communications and I do know how to communicate. And I think in a role like I'm in a position that I'm in terms of just starting something from scratch, communications is the most important thing for success on both sides. And that's not to say that there is a lack of communication, because there's not, but I think setting expectations and communicating those from day one is definitely essential. And we did do that. You know, we spoke earlier about goal setting that we did on day one. And I think that was really great. But I think following up on those goals on a regular basis and saying, okay, like these are our goals that we set on day one. Where are we with them? Like, let's have a check-in. Like, have we met those goals? Like, let's put a deadline on those goals. Like, let's make sure that these goals are actually actionable, attainable. We have specifics. Because for me, like, I'm definitely a goal-oriented person. I like to check things off my list. And I think that could be said for most people that are coming into Adventure Media as a new hire. Like, that's the personality type that you're looking for based on prior episodes. Another plug there. Go back and listen. I think you want driven people, and driven people need specifics and benchmarks.
Danielle, I would ask, based on some of the content that I've seen you write and talk about, you're someone who has dreams, aspirations. I could relate, because I also live in, I'm not saying also, but I live myself sometimes in fantasy land. I recently wrote on LinkedIn, or maybe you wrote on LinkedIn on my behalf, I don't remember which, that nothing in my life has ever turned out as good as I thought it would. And I went on to clarify that I don't mean that as a negative thing. I always imagine everything that is going to be better. I mean, I guess that could be taken as a bad thing, depending on how one's life turned out. But for me, I feel like it's a good thing, where I think my life is pretty good, but it's not as good as I ever imagined, as I tend to imagine things would be. So, you know, growing up as a teenager in your early, then in your early 20s, you've had dreams and aspirations and fantasies and sort of things in your mind as it relates to how things might turn out for you. And I assume that this is not necessarily, maybe it was the fantasy, maybe it wasn't. What were some of your dreams? How has it played out for you? And if you're talking to other, you know, young professionals who are in a position where it's like, look, there's a certain tension and fear. If I take this position, which I know I want, and there's some good things in it, I need a job, but listen, it's also going to be a very different path than the pathway to fulfill my dreams. How did you overcome that? How do you deal with that struggle or that psychological tension or the emotional stress? Like, how do you cope with it? How do you face those struggles? And how has it played out for you, generally speaking, where you pivot, you do something new? It's not what you expected to do. How do you make the best of it?
So I think you're asking a few different really good questions. I'll start with the first one, which is, what were my dreams, fantasies, ambitions growing up? Those definitely changed over time. When I look back, like, I remember when I was little, I wanted to be a fashion designer. I went from that to acting. I wanted to be an actress for the longest time. I wanted to be a film director, a producer. I've always been interested in the media. Like, if I'm looking back, I can always trace entertainment as a common thread in everything I've ever been interested in. I'm highly creative and I love to write. I love to dream. By nature, I'm a dreamer and I live in a little fantasy world all the time. So storytelling has always been something that I've been interested in. And practically growing up, I think those dreams pivoted to more realistic options and alternatives. In high school and in my early days of college, I really thought I was going to be a music writer, a music critic. And then I quickly learned that criticizing people for a living was just not healthy for myself or my psyche. So I started taking internships. And I think this gets to your second question, which was, like, how do you deal with something that's like not really in line with your ultimate goals and dreams? Like, do you take a position that may not get you to the place that you want to be at? Like, I started doing that. I started taking internships for the sake of experience. I started taking internships that had nothing to do with anything I've ever wanted to do. I took an internship one summer at a PR agency. So I thought, maybe communications, public relations, who knows, maybe I'll work with celebrities, maybe I'll drop off like dresses at Kate Hudson's studio. No, never happened. I hated communications. I hated public relations.
What did you hate? I find this fascinating that first you just went to take internships in just a broad range of positions for the sake of experience. And I think listeners should learn from that attitude.
It's also directly tied to your major too. So the fact that you ended up like not liking it and still pursuing that degree, I think is it very interesting.
Yeah, so I chose communications by default. It was never something I was passionate about. I just chose the closest relation to media. And, you know, I toyed for a moment going the film route. I was going to be a film major. I took film classes, but looking at the job outcomes when you're a film major versus communications major, I went for the one with the highest job outcome turnout. So communications was my default. I was never passionate about it. I did love analyzing media. That's what I did a lot of the time. And I've always been a pop culture enthusiast, so that kind of gave me a slight sense of fulfillment in that capacity. But the reason I chose to go down like the communications internship experience route was really just because I wanted to be in New York. My first summer, I interned at a music magazine in Cleveland, and that was great. Like, it was fun. And then I realized I didn't want to criticize people. But that aside, I think the experience I had working at a PR agency and then again, like at a real estate company doing communications, like was also a great experience. Like the biggest thing that like helped me in my mindset was that even if you don't like the internship you have, even if you don't end up wanting to work there full time, at least you're one step closer to knowing what you actually do want to do because you know what you don't want to do. And I think that mentality really helped me take experience that didn't necessarily get me to my dream job, but it definitely helped teach me skills along the way. And I think whether it was just picking up on cultural components of the companies I worked at or learning how to communicate with people, like how to draft professional emails, like I did learn a lot. And I think those learning opportunities, whether or not I liked them on a day to day and wanted to do them full time, were invaluable.
And I think that actually fits the puzzle pieces into you basically came out of school and were thrown into this job that didn't exist before. And if you didn't previously have that experience, then I don't know if you would have had the ability to do that. You know what I mean? Like, you've done it really well. And I think that level of like maturity and sophistication and worldliness, whatever you want to call it, has helped you kind of figure out when we asked you to come back and say, hey, interview for this other job that we don't even know exists yet. You were able to do so in a way that was clear and made a lot of sense and has worked out. So let's kind of shift gears and talk about content specifically now. We have a lot of different things going on at this agency. There's archives of like Medium posts from 3 years ago, and there's like random YouTube videos from 6 years ago, and books that just came out, and just like an overall message that was like, okay, here you go, figure out what we need to do. How did you start to formulate a content strategy for the company?
I think for me, and this is something that I learned at my previous internship, so they were not for nothing, I learned to research. And I learned that in school too. Like, I've always been very big on educating myself before I start anything. So I dove into like what it means to make a content strategy. I found a lot of people that I know do great content, like Alex Lieberman of The Morning Brew, Gary Vee. I looked into what actually they do behind the scenes to make the content that they make. So I started internalizing a framework that needed to happen. And from there, I also did research on the content that you already have, the pre-existing content. You know, day one came in and you guys did a great job of laying out your pre-existing content. I read it all, I watched it all, I listened to it all. And from there, I kind of got a sense of the tone of voice for each of you. I got a sense of the company culture by way of just being here for a little bit. And like using those two components, like researching what makes a content strategy and researching what it actually is that you guys are doing and putting out there, kind of allowed me to make a content strategy for you that makes sense. And it's still evolving. Like, that's what I would say about it, is that like, I'm not an expert by any means, obviously. Like, I'm still like, this is only what, my fourth, fifth month. And I know there's a lot that can be improved on. And like, there's a lot of content out there and I'm only one person. So it's definitely something that will constantly be amended and improved upon. But I think doing that research from day one and understanding what content is and how to streamline it definitely was the first step.
I think one of the more interesting things that you did that I wouldn't have ever thought of doing myself was you had asked us all individually to send you the sorts of media that we consume. You were like, hey, like what blogs do you read? What, like, do you read the newspaper? What sort of articles? What Netflix shows do you watch? Podcasts you listen to? Because you, like, you're essentially going to be the voice for the company. And there's like a recognition there, or something I never really thought about before, that like our opinions and our voice is informed by something else, like a collection of everything else that we're exposed to. And I think that's really interesting. And I think somebody else that's kind of taking on some sort of content role or trying to think about how to create a content strategy is just sit down and say, like, hey, what books have you read recently? What sort of recurring blogs do you go to all the time? And I think that's been super helpful. And I think that really helped you figure out our voice collectively. Not that I knew what the voice was, but you helped kind of determine what this should be from like a collective, like not just myself or Isaac, but really the entire company. And you did that rather quickly.
Thank you. Yeah. I think at the end of the day, none of our voices are that unique. They're usually an amalgam of everything we've heard and consumed before. So picking up on that is definitely something that I recommend, because it definitely improves whatever you're putting out there.
As far as LinkedIn goes, you've been working on LinkedIn. Have you found any tricks that work, things that work better than others? Do you have any like tips for other content creators that are trying to use LinkedIn as a lead gen strategy?
I think the biggest thing I've noticed on LinkedIn, and again, I'm not an expert, I have a lot to learn, but the first sentence is a hook that really should be carefully thought out and planned. And it's something that we still need to work on. I think it's definitely something to keep in mind when you are making a LinkedIn post. Make sure that first sentence stands out. And I would also say that unless you're really creating, you know, an amazing award-winning post that like could potentially win a Pulitzer, like brevity is better than longevity. But I think also spacing. Like that's also something I've noticed, is that you definitely want to have those sentence breaks and make sure it's easy on the eyes, because there's nothing anyone wants to do less than read a full block of text. Like that's just not the age that we live in, no matter how old you are, how young you are. Like if I see two paragraphs condensed together, I'm not going to read it.
Makes sense.
So to kind of wrap this up a little bit, what do you think is one thing that we're not doing that you wish we were doing?
In terms of what?
Content, or just collectively as an agency to either help you do your job better, or something that you just wish that we were doing, working on, that we really haven't been able to do yet.
I think we have a lot of potential with this podcast. I don't know. Like I love tuning in every week, hearing what you guys talk about. It's always interesting to me. I think the shame in it is that it's not like, yeah, I think we get a lot of listens, but it's all relative. Like more people could be benefiting from what we're talking about, and finding a way to make that happen, to get more ears, to even get more eyes. Like that's the other thing. Like we could be incorporating video, and that's something that I think could be a cool opportunity. But other than that, like there's so many opportunities and different paths we could go down in terms of content, and even in terms of like just the agency as a whole. Like there are so many possibilities that it's hard to really pinpoint one, especially on the spot. But
I like that. Well, we're going to look back at this then. We'll make a calendar invite for a year from now to look back at this podcast and think about whatever has transpired with our content strategy and how we're leveraging video and how the podcast has grown. I'm excited for that, because I agree, there's a lot that we have in front of us, and it's really just about prioritizing. And I mean, one thing that I think that we all need to do better is like cross-sharing and redistributing like content we already have. We're producing a lot of new things, but it's hard to do that. It's hard to figure out how to package something and put it somewhere else. So I think that's also something that I want to work on in the coming months.
I agree. Yeah, it's something I've been noticing. I've been trying to repurpose the transcripts, and it's very hard. it's very hard to do it, but I think it's definitely something that's necessary and something to work on.
Have we been getting transcripts of these podcasts?
Yeah.
From Rev? Where are we getting them done?
We're getting them from Rev.
Let's go. Blog posts. Let's make them blog posts.
Easier said than done.
Like, you asking Danielle about, like, what you're posting on LinkedIn is just, like, it's the Spider-Man meme of the two Spider-Men pointing at one another. Like,
I like it because, like, I get, like, friends will WhatsApp me or whatever. Like, oh, wow, man, you're getting more active on LinkedIn. I really see it. Like, I was like, yeah. I was like, you know, I have this great girl at my office who actually posts them. And they're like, oh, man, you're such a bastard. You have, like, someone posting on your LinkedIn for you. I was like, well, I do approve some of them here and there. Sometimes it's mine.
You said all of those things, to be honest. It is your voice.
I was like, it's all yours.
I want to potentially leave myself open to disassociating myself from a post in case I get into trouble for anything and I get it out and I could say, well, it was really just Danielle. but that's unlikely to happen. Danielle, what don't you like about my management style or how it's gone here? What could have been improved from on a personal level with me and then on a personal level with Patrick? What are our fatal flaws?
Listen, you guys are important people. You're not just some bottom feeders around here. You have other important things to fill up your day. So
don't sugarcoat.
Yes, so I was just rereading one of Isaac's potential LinkedIn posts about cushioning criticism with positivity. So
I'm no sandwich cushion criticism bedwetting. What are you talking about? There's no cushioning criticism.
No, you're saying not to do that, but now I find myself doing that.
Oh yeah, exactly. That's what, yeah, good. That's what you mean.
Yeah, so you guys can be hard to reach. Sometimes I just need answers. And I'm the kind of person, like, I like to get things done. I like to get them done now. I like to move forward. I like to boom, 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 go with the flow. Like, let's make progress. And it's hard when I have to run it by the both of you because it takes time to get a response. And it's understandable, but it's definitely difficult for me to make strides.
Understandable, but unacceptable. Good. Okay, that's good feedback.
That's fair. And that's something I totally acknowledge. And I think is something that a lot of other team members would say as well.
Danielle, I will speak to Patrick about that feedback.
I will say one thing, I mean, if you want to take a page out of like Avery's book, is just to annoy the living hell out of us. Like, it works. When you really do need something, just feel free to just badger and be annoying. I will never hold it against you.
I can't ask Isaac for the one password one more time, though.
I'm doing it right now as we speak.
No, I think that's my problem, though. That's something maybe I should work on. Like, I hate annoying people and I hate pestering people. Like, it's just not in my nature. I'm very independent. Like, I am a very independent person. So to ask someone for something is just out of my comfort zone, but it's definitely something I need to work on. So
just to be fair about the one password thing, just so I could slightly exculpate myself, is that the moment you asked for it, I went and I tried to find it. I spent like 30 minutes and I failed. So like, if once I fail at something, it's very hard for me to get back into that task. But I'm doing it. But I just want to let you know that I did try originally right away, relatively in a short period of time after you asked me.
I would say failure isn't tolerated here, but we know it's tolerated based on everything you've said historically. So
based on just my performance, failure has to be tolerated, unless I'd be out. I'd be fired every day. All right, Danielle, listen, this was I enjoyed this. I think we should have you back more often and have your input and your feedback more often. If not, just at the very least for you to give you a chance to just literally tell us what passwords you need. Patrick, any closing thoughts?
No, I appreciate the transparency and the honesty. And I will say the reason I wanted to do this was because you've taken on a very difficult challenge and you have absolutely knocked it out of the park. And I think a lot of other people could learn from this and can develop the courage to try to take a risk in the way that you have and to learn from some of the challenges that you've had to overcome. And I think it's awesome. And it hasn't been that long of time. You've accomplished a lot in a short period of time, and our company has seriously benefited from it. I love the content. I mean, I love being a part of it. You've made it very easy for Isaac and I to do something that we love. I've really enjoyed the podcast and I think it's great. and everything else, right? Everything else we've been producing and working on together. So it's been fantastic, and I'm looking forward to what we can continue to accomplish together.
Thank you, Patrick, for your kind words, and I am looking forward as well. Big things to come.
Danielle, where's the best place to hide a dead body?
We're gonna have to go with the second page of Google.
That's correct. You've been listening to the How to Hide a Dead Body podcast with Adventure Media. I am Isaac Radansky with Patrick Gilbert and Danielle Immerman, and we look forward to talking next week.